Today is Friday, August 14th at 12:35 p.m. And it's August 14th, 2015. And I am Mari Allen, and I am a volunteer with the Mill Valley Public Library for its oral history project. And I am here interviewing Janet Muneno Daijogo, spelled Daijogo. Her maiden name is spelled Muneno. And we are here to talk about her life in Mill Valley and previous to that. So, Janet, if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself, state your name and your birth date and place, please.
I'm Janet Daijogo, and I was born on March 21st, 1937, so currently I'm 78 years old, and I live in Mill Valley.
And where were you born?
Oh, I was born in San Francisco.
In what hospital?
In the St. Francis Hospital, which I don't know if it's still there.
Mm-hmm.
Is it?
That I don't know.
Yeah, and I was born there, but up to from birth to 5 years old, I lived in Pescadero, California.
And where is Pescadero?
It's down the coast by near, it's just down the coast.
Okay, like near Mendocino?
South of San Francisco.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And tell me, what were your parents' names?
My dad was Saiki Muneno, S-A-I-K-I, and my mother was Mutsu Muneno. And
were they first-generation Japanese?
They were second-generation.
Okay, so they were Nisei.
They were Nisei. My father was born in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. My mother was born in Sacramento.
Okay, and do you know what part of Japan their family came
from?
Yes,
both, I believe, were... I know for sure my mother's family, both of them are from southern Japan. My mother's family was in a rural area by Hiroshima.
Mm-hmm.
My father his family lived off the Inland Sea on a island in the Inland Sea. That's all I know.
Do you know what year they arrived in Hawaii?
The grandparents?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Okay. And when did your parents meet?
They met in probably the 30s, around the late 1930s. Because I was born in 37. Mm-hmm. So they must have met in mid-30s. My father was 8 years older than my mother.
Mm-hmm. And when did they come to California then, if they were from Hawaii?
My father came from Hawaii when he was 19.
Mm-hmm.
So he went to Berkeley. He came to school. And my mother came to school from Sacramento.
Oh, okay. So she wasn't from Hawaii then.
No, she was from Sacramento.
Okay. And what was their occupation?
They were farmers. They farmed mainly sugar peas,
mm-hmm.
Off of Pescadero. And they didn't even need to water, she said, because it was so moist.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting now, in the middle of a drought?
Oh, it is. It is amazing to think about.
So she said it was the fog itself and the natural water was enough.
Mm-hmm. Now, did your parents speak Japanese?
Yes. They both spoke Japanese.
And did they speak Japanese to you?
No.
Okay, so they only spoke English to
you. Yeah, mainly English. I think they might have spoken a little bit. I think they spoke Japanese to each other once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can understand a little bit, mm-hmm. but basically I'm not bilingual.
Okay, and you're considered a sansei, is that correct?
I am.
A third generation Japanese. Okay,
right.
So from 0 to 5, you lived mm-hmm. where? In Pescadero?
Pescadero.
Mm-hmm.
And then from about 5 to 8, or just... I was trying to figure that out. I always think of it as the 3 years, about 5 to 8, somewhere in. I lived in Topaz, Utah, at an internment camp. Except now you're supposed to say a prison.
Oh, yeah.
Incarceration. Mm-hmm. And then from 8 to 3rd grade, 4th grade, I lived in, 3rd grade, Oklahoma, mm-hmm. in Stillwater, Oklahoma, where my father taught Japanese to the Navy. And then we moved to the projects in Richmond. He got a job in Japan as a translator for the Navy.
For the U.S. Navy.
Yeah, or I guess it might have been the Army. Anyway, I think it was the Army. And then after we stayed a few months in the project, the housing was completed for dependents, so we went over there. And then from the fourth grade to high school, through high school, I lived on an army base in Tokyo. Not in Tokyo, but
outside.
On the outskirts.
What army base were you living on?
It was called Grand Heights.
Mm-hmm. Is it still there?
No.
Mm-hmm.
No, because after the peace treaty was signed and they closed, they started to close down, pull back. Mm-hmm. And return things to the Japanese. And so I have no idea what it is now.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of land. So I'm sure it's really built up,
mm-hmm.
Because it was very different. It was like putting a slice of America in a Japanese environment,
mm-hmm.
surrounded by Japanese.
Now we're going to talk just a little mm-hmm. bit about your recollections of your early childhood. So from 0 to 5, you were living on a farm in Pescadero.
Yeah, yeah.
And then at age 5, you and your family mm-hmm. were forced to leave.
Yes.
What are your recollections of that time? So that was 1942?
Yeah, 43. I think that up to 5, you don't have so many memories. But I just remember, mainly what I remember is stories that I was told about being in the cabbage fields and, being left there by accident one day. And, I guess to keep me occupied, they would give me nails and a hammer, and I would pound the nails into the cabbage.
Mm-hmm. Into the cabbage.
I don't know. But I think that would be a good toy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my parents worked, really hard on the farm. And my father, because he was a citizen, he leased land to other Japanese farmers who were not citizens and couldn't, and so that they could farm mm-hmm. and have a living. Then when the war came and Pearl Harbor came, it was, to my 5-year-old mind, it was very traumatic being that scared. And that's what I learned about how fearful you can be. And I think there's certain aspects of my life that are issues. Like if somebody knocks on the door, I always have a startle reflex.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm nervous to open a door at my age.
Hmm.
And so, although I've opened many, many doors and nothing's happened, but I think when you're traumatized as a child,
mm-hmm.
that it stays with you.
Mm-hmm.
When they came to search the house, and I would have been 5 then because that was early on, my mother said that when the military police left, the young men who were searching, she said, I stopped talking and I couldn't just stop shaking for 2.5 hours.
Mm.
And if you are a parent, that's pretty severe trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a sensitive little girl, and so I just reacted that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think as we went into all that, it was very a tumultuous time for the family and that culture, all those people. And then when we went into camp, I think life became normal
mm-hmm.
in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And we went, you know, I started the first grade there.
Mm-hmm. Do you recollect going to camp? Do you recollect going to, you do.
A so. Little bit, yeah. I remember that we were taken on, probably by bus, but we were on a train. We got on a train to the desert.
Before, so you, I had read that you had first been at Tanforan, what was Tanforan Racetrack at the time, which is now Tanforan Mall next to San Francisco Airport.
That's true.
I know that there's a big statue at the mall in remembrance. I brought my children there. So
you
that,
did?
Yes. To
I've
show
never
them,
done that.
It would be very interesting, I think, for your grandchildren to see.
Yes,
there's
I'm
a big statue that commemorates the fact that that was the first, they called it a relocation center for Japanese Americans at the time.
Oh,
it was at the
gosh.
Racetrack.
So it's right, if it's you go to the mall,
it's in the
there.
Center of the mall.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm
going to
tell my daughter that.
Yes.
Maybe we'll make a little field trip.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you remember being at the racetrack at all?
I remember it was surrounded by barbed wire and thought it was very scary and frightening for me. And I remember thinking that if I went the other way at the bar, if I looked out of the barbed wire, I could see dead people, which was not true. But it was my imagination. And I also remember there were, I think they refrigerated food by packing it in dry ice. And then they would throw the dry ice out on the racetrack or somewhere. And there'd be like puddles and there'd be mist dropping, you know. So it was very spooky. And then I remember they told us we were in a barracks. And they told us that we should, my parents should stuff these mattresses with hay from the wherever they had it, probably in the stalls, and not, you know, to pack them full because they compress and we would, you know, it would be uncomfortable. So they did, and my mom said all night long, the first night, one of us would roll off the mattress.
When you say one of you, did you, you had a sibling?
Yeah, I had, at that point, I had a younger brother, 2 years younger, and a younger sister, 2 years younger than he, and then my other brother was born in Topaz. So I also remember my sister becoming very, the food was not sound very good, nor was it very clean, apparently. And a lot of people got trench mouth, which is like a little disease. I think
maybe
it's like
a bacterial disease
and,
of some sort.
They treated it with a purple medicine called gentian violet, and you, they coat your mouth. And my sister had it so severely, she was a toddler then, and just had learned to walk, that she forgot to, she was so sick that she had, she couldn't walk anymore. She forgot how to walk. And then when she recovered, she learned again.
Wow.
I know.
So after Tanforan, being in the racetrack, in the, you were then transferred. How long were you at Tanforan? Do you know?
I think it was just a few months.
Okay. And then you were transferred by train to Topaz, Utah.
Right. And so we went by train, and at one point, I just remember it was hot. And at one point, my mother, it stopped, and they said we could get off and stretch our legs. And my mother pulled down the curtains and to the windows and wouldn't let us off. And I said, I asked her many years later why she didn't let us off. And she said, because there were military police with guns, and they were pointing them at the prisoners. And she didn't want us to see that. So she kept us in the train, even though it was so hot. So that's one memory I have of the train ride. And then when we got there, we were assigned to barracks. And it had a potbelly stove for heat. And I don't know how big the room was, but I would say it was probably about the size of this room. And so five of us were in there with cots lined up mm-hmm. against that wall.
So about 10, maybe 20 feet
yeah.
by, how long would you say this room is? 60 feet?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't think it's even,
that far. No.
No, I would say it was maybe 30.
30.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, you could probably, if we wanted to, we could look that mm-hmm. up. But I just remember the cots were in a row there. And I asked my mother, I said, well, if you could only take two suitcases of clothes, of stuff, I said, where did you get the sheets? And she said, Janet, we didn't have sheets and pillowcases. We just had army blankets, which were very scratchy,
mm-hmm.
on mattresses and pillows. And I think maybe later on they got some, because
mm-hmm.
I don't remember afterwards. But when we certainly there weren't any when we got there. Just those striped mattresses and mm-hmm. mattress ticking,
mm-hmm.
and there were blankets, those brown army blankets.
Mm-hmm. And what else do you remember about camp? I mean, being a child is very
yeah,
you're very,
it's different. Very
different.
Yeah, and I remember going to the mess hall and eating. And getting food with everybody in a line on metal trays. And my brother, who was quite mischievous.
And what was his name? What is his name?
Hito.
Hito.
Hito, yeah. He had a piece of otsukemono, mm-hmm. of cabbage thing.
Mm-hmm. Otsukemono is a pickled vegetable,
yeah, right,
in Japanese.
And he pulled it out. And it was happened to be a long piece, mm-hmm. and he was showing everybody.
So they were serving you Japanese food
some.
In camp.
Mm-hmm. And then they also did things like one time we had to practically quit eating because for 30 days, according to my mom, they just served the inside of animals, like liver and kidneys and stuff. And
oh.
that's not something Japanese eat.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know what we ate then, rice, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But they did have rice.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember. I mean, people who were cooks in their outside life helped out and they cooked. So I'm sure they did their best.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the middle of the desert.
Mm-hmm. So what did you do as a child for entertainment and activities? And
well, let's see. We ran around outside. I remember my brother and the little boys played marbles all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They took the cots, we had metal, not
like metal
spring.
They weren't.
They were like things like that, and they
like a, was it metal? Like a
yeah,
Y-shaped
yeah,
metal.
Yeah, exactly.
Piece.
And so we learned to make slingshots out of take one piece and make a slingshot. And
mm-hmm.
so that was especially for the boys. And the girls got jacks, and
mm-hmm.
I remember playing jacks in the laundry room,
mm-hmm.
the central bathroom and laundry room had very smooth floors, cement floors,
mm-hmm.
where it was cool. So we did that,
mm-hmm.
and I learned to jump rope there. I
mm-hmm.
remember. So,
and what about school? When do you remember starting
yes,
school?
Yes, when I was. Probably it would be six. I started the first grade because they didn't have kindergarten. And my teacher was, we walked to another block. And my teacher was, she probably was young, fairly young then.
Was she Japanese American
no,
as well?
No, she was not. She was, she was a friend. She was, what friends? What, and not, you know, that.
Like what, like a volunteer association or?
No, but there, it's a religious group. The friends.
Oh, like a community church or a
yeah.
Mormon group? Or?
But it wasn't Mormon.
Mm-hmm.
It was, they have schools. Or Chelsea Clinton went to one. But
oh, Quaker.
Quaker,
mm-hmm.
that's it. Sorry, I
mm-hmm.
could not think of it. It was a Quaker. She was a Quaker,
mm-hmm.
and she volunteered to come into camp and be with us and teach us. So she taught us great songs and taught me to read.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember her name was Miss Light, and I corresponded with her into college.
Wow. So she had a great impact on
you. Yeah, she did. And she, I think she was kind and gentle and, you know, had her heart in the right place. And when I was in Berkeley, I think she, for a while, was in Albany, but I never connected with her except by letter.
Mm-hmm.
And soon after that, she moved to South Carolina or North Carolina into a retirement community. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote her, we wrote, and then she had a stroke and she wrote with her left hand,
mm-hmm.
you know, all wavery. And then she must have passed away mm-hmm. somewhere
mm-hmm.
by the time I finished college. So, yeah.
So you left camp at age eight, around mm-hmm. age eight. Mm-hmm. What do you remember about leaving? Or was there an announcement of some sort? Or
no, not
like
really.
That?
I hardly have any. By then, my father was teaching in Oklahoma.
So he had left the camp.
Yeah, he had left camp. He had a job in Oklahoma teaching Japanese to the Navy. And then we met him in Stillwater. And so I'm not sure. Oh, yeah, we were in Richmond, California by mm-hmm. then. So from Stillwater, we went to Richmond, then he went overseas, and then we followed him mm-hmm. afterwards.
So how was it being a sansei, third-generation Japanese, going to Japan? had you visited before?
No, because, no. Let's see, I would be in the fourth grade. I finished the fourth grade there, and then the rest of the time I was in Grand Heights. And I think by that, as somebody told me years later, you were over-colonized. That I totally identified with my army brat friends
mm-hmm.
and was pretty much just accepted by them.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, remember, I mean, I couldn't speak Japanese.
Mm-hmm. And do you have a Japanese name also?
I do, Mutsumi. First name is mm-hmm. Mutsumi, mm-hmm. yeah. And I used it for a while when I did Aikido, but it's too much trouble to spell Mutsumi and Daijogo.
So on the base, you were there
on
from
the base,
fourth grade did. To through high school. Uh-huh. So did you leave the base at all to mm-hmm. explore Japan?
Yeah, we traveled quite a bit, not a lot, but.
And so, what was post-war Japan like?
It was. I remember the main station in Tokyo mm-hmm. was still a shell. It mm-hmm. had been bombed, and the Great Dome was still open,
mm-hmm.
and so it was in the process of rebuilding. But it was. Torn, war torn,
mm-hmm.
you know, and my mother had a brother, her oldest brother, they had left in Japan with his grandparents, and by then he, as an adult, lived in Tokyo. He had a wife and a son who was, Satoshi was probably, I think maybe he was college age or in college, I'm not sure, and we would bring food to them.
From the base,
which I think was illegal, but that's all mm-hmm. right. And so we brought them things like, I remember, sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what else they brought. And they sometimes later, they could come to our house on the army base. And I remember distinctly Satoshi, who was, you know, a young teenager, young man. We had a birthday cake or something, and they were just awful cakes with, you know, a lot of frosting that my mother probably had, that was brought in the commissary. And he just about ate all the frosting, you know, because he hadn't had sugar for mm-hmm. years.
Mm-hmm.
And so we very much identified with the population of Japan as the defeated nation. And we were American, and we were not part of that. So I think in our minds, we were for real separated. We didn't really have anything. We knew nothing of the culture, practically, mm-hmm. except we ate Japanese food
mm-hmm.
as well as American food. And our folks, and we looked like this. We mm-hmm. looked Japanese. And our folks spoke Japanese. So that's what I remember. And our Army base experience was probably like living in a village
mm-hmm.
in the U.S. where everything was American, and you know, all the kids were Army brats mainly. Very few. There was one African American boy that we all loved. He was a couple years older, maybe 2 or 3 years older. He became the student body president. Mm-hmm. He was very popular. And there was maybe one other family, the Aokis, who mm-hmm. were Japanese American. They had Lowell and Janice, so at least two children.
Mm-hmm.
But there were maybe another family beside them later. But we were, again, not... There weren't a lot of us.
Mm-hmm.
It's my karma.
So did you apply to college from mm-hmm, Japan then? Mm-hmm. So what was the name of your high school that you graduated from in
Narimasu? Narimasu High School. Narimasu High School.
Mm-hmm. And what year did you graduate?
American High School, mm-hmm. maybe it was. I graduated in 55.
Mm-hmm. And have you gone back to Japan since that time?
Yeah, my husband and I went back in 62, 63 for a year just to have an adventure mm-hmm. before we, you know, settled down.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very interesting because it was like stepping into another planet mm-hmm. from the Japan that I left,
mm-hmm.
you know, which was already being reconstructed
mm-hmm.
and all. But it was an amazing transformation.
Mm-hmm.
So,
where did you meet your husband?
Here.
Here in the United States.
Yeah.
And so you went to Cal Berkeley mm-hmm. from the Army base in mm-hmm. Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And how was your experience at Berkeley?
It was hard.
Mm-hmm.
For me, the work was hard. I can't say that the Army schools really prepared
mm-hmm.
us for very much.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly there was the academic standards were amplified for mm-hmm. me. And, you know, luckily I made it through, but it was the first year was hard. What was also hard was I didn't really fit in anywhere as a Japanese American young woman. I didn't really fit in with the Jap. My mother said I would now go to Berkeley and be with my people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my people didn't really...
They weren't there yet.
They, no.
mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I tried to make friends, and it was civil, but I never made a friend. I never made a true friend at Berkeley
mm.
that I don't think I don't have any contact with any of them,
hmm.
anybody in from Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened when I was a sophomore is I met Sam, my husband.
Mm-hmm.
And
who is he? Also Japanese American.
And, yeah.
And what generation is he?
Sansei.
As well.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he lived in Marin,
mm-hmm.
and we met through another boyfriend that I had in mm-hmm. Japan, and this boy's name was Fred, and he played football with Sam at Tam High.
Oh.
Isn't that a weird thing?
Yeah, Sam should be here for this interview.
I know, he should.
Too.
He's the one you want him. Because he was the one.
Well, maybe he can be the next interview.
Except he's very dead.
Oh.
I know.
It's I'm so sorry.
I know. It's very sad.
So you have to speak on his behalf then,
I will.
As well.
I'll try to remember. I mean, I do remember some things he said. So he and Fred played football together, and I started seeing Fred again. And then Fred went to Korea because he joined the Army. And Sam and I met at a dance. And so he took me home, and then, you know, it was a regular little romance that started out.
And did he have a Japanese name also?
His name, he actually, his name wasn't really Sam. It was Masami.
Oh, and he shortened it.
He took the S-A-M out of the middle of his name. And his, I think the only people, his relatives and his mother called him Masami. They didn't call him Sam. But all his high school, all his friends did. And all his friends were from Belvedere and Tiburon. So they were all Caucasians. So he grew up with these rich kids. You
How
know?
Did he end up in Marin? How did his family
Because
come here?
His family, after the war, everybody dispersed and they went to, you know, try to get jobs and things. His father found work as a gardener, and it was, and I don't know what else, where else, but he ended up in on Corinthian Island. And so, of course, Sam's mom was with him, and so she did, he gardened, and sometimes he tended bar for the person whose house they they lived in, a small cottage on Corinthian Island.
And had they been, where had they been interned?
I think they were in Tule Lake, which was north. And because his father, stepfather, this was his stepfather. His real father committed suicide before going into camp because he was an alcoholic and he knew he wouldn't be able to have any liquor.
Oh.
And so he hung himself.
Oh.
I know.
Hmm.
So I found this out later.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, his mom remarried. Actually, they didn't remarry in camp. But they lived together, and so he was sometimes tending bar, but mainly he was a gardener. And when Sam was in high school, they married because they were common law. Yeah, but they were together for a long time, and they were always fighting. And, you know, but she was a real protector for Sam. You know, she gave him everything that she could.
And do you recollect what he had to say about being at Tam High?
He had a good time. I think he was the only Japanese boy, Japanese American. He said there was in the beginning, and there was one exchange student from Japan, and everybody liked him, but then he was, you know, he wasn't an American. But he just because he was on Belvedere Island, there was not a huge, and Corinthian Island, there wasn't a huge population of boys or kids. It was small then. He said you could go down to Tiburon Boulevard, and there might be a car between Mill Valley and here. They used to go to the theater in Mill Valley, and they would hitch rides, you know, hope that somebody would come along. And everybody, every car that came along, knew them, and they knew them. They knew each other. So they would get these rides, you know, into Mill Valley, the big town.
So you met sophomores in college?
I did.
Oh, okay.
He was in art school. He didn't go to college. He went to art school and the Academy of Advertising Art. And, yeah, we met then. And then...
And when did you marry?
5 years later.
Which was what year was that? 19... 60
Let's see, I finished in 69, so we must have married in 60. Oh, that would have been 60, 61, 62, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I'm very bad with
dates. That's
dates.
Okay.
And I didn't look it up, of
that's
course.
That's okay. And so when, did he speak Japanese? Did his mom speak with him?
That's an interesting question. Yes, she spoke broken Japanese,
mm-hmm.
well, broken English, I should say, and they spoke a dialect of Japanese from Hiroshima.
Oh, okay.
Because she was from Hiroshima, so it was Hiroshima Ben.
Yeah.
And I think his father was, his stepfather also maybe was in that. So what he learned was a Japanese that had not changed. The language had not changed for 50 or 60 years. And plus that, it was rural country Japanese. And so it was funny Japanese,
mm-hmm.
apparently.
So when you went back in 1962, was he your, he was speaking his?
Well, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was speaking his Japanese. I mean, he could get around a lot better than I could. But he found a job, part-time job. We both found part-time jobs in Japan. He, as an illustrator, he mm-hmm. worked for a very prestigious company called Light Publicity 3 days a week. And they would take him to parties and have him speak Japanese, and then they would just howl with laughter, apparently. And when my daughters, both Tana and Maki, Tana actually majored in Japanese when she went to Cal, and my friend Yukiko Haydock spoke when she was so excited that Tana was speaking Japanese, and she went and talked to her in the kitchen in Japanese, and she said, oh, she said, her Japanese is beautiful. You must never let her listen to her father speak Japanese. And she should...
Oh, that's funny.
It was very funny.
So after your time in Japan, mm-hmm. you came back to the States, and where mm-hmm. did you live then?
Okay, so we were back to the States, and I lived in Berkeley,
mm-hmm.
met Sam. When we married, we, let's see, we married. I was teaching in South San Francisco. He had a job in San Diego.
So you were an education major then,
yeah.
at Berkeley? Okay. And so
well,
what were
you? Didn't major in education then. You majored in, I majored in child development and minored in history.
Mm-hmm.
And then you took some education courses, which you're totally unprepared to teach.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all right. You learned,
yes.
on the job. So then we went to San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would have been 60, we married in 62 or 1 maybe. And so then we decided that before we settled down, we would go to Japan, and because he was working for General Dynamics Astronautics, and it was going down the tubes, and I was working in a, you know, an underprivileged area in, it was hard in San Diego. And so we decided to have a little adventure. So we saved just enough money. We figured we could stay for maybe 4 to 6 months. And so we just packed up a bunch of things and caught a boat.
Mm-hmm.
And then we both, once we got there, we traveled a little bit. And then we found part-time jobs, which enabled us to stay for a year. And after a year, we were really ready to come home, you know, because we'd sort of not started our life
mm-hmm.
here. But it was a really good thing to do. I mean, it's good to have your adventure. So we never felt, I think, the rest of our lives, we never felt like we needed to travel.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we did it all
mm-hmm.
in one place.
And when you returned, where did you return to?
Well, we returned to San Diego, and he had a job waiting. A friend, Tom Suzuki, hired him, and so that made, we were going to go to New York, because that's what people did in the art world, but he had a job, so we went there. And after, and I became, I was pregnant. I was teaching in Chula Vista, and one day he came home, and he said, "I just quit my job." And I said, "Oh, really? Why would you do that?" And he, his friend Tom Suzuki, they was embroiled in a political thing at this place, and so he got fired. Mm-hmm. So Sam got up from the drawing board and said, "I quit," and he left with Sam, with Tom, mm-hmm. and that was it, because he just thought it was unjust, mm-hmm. and there was no reason, because Tom was a brilliant book designer. Mm-hmm. So that was it. So then he didn't have a job, and I was pregnant, but I finished my contract in June, and in April, Sam, I remember he went to San Francisco to try to find a job, because we decided, well, we'll go back to the city. Mm-hmm. And luckily, he found a job. And so as soon as I finished my job in June, we got a U-Haul truck and moved up to, we moved to Mill Valley.
Oh, not Starbury. To San Francisco. You moved
no,
right
we
to
looked
Mill
in San Francisco. But I don't know. We just, I think because his parents were there still in Belvedere, and that was what he knew. And I loved Mill Valley, because I had come to Mill Valley when I was a freshman at Berkeley, because I saw a scene, this Fred Bremerman. And he took me to Mill Valley from Berkeley just to say, this is where, you know, I went to high school and this is where I lived with mm-hmm. these folks. And I said, oh, gosh, it's so... I remember it was in Cascade Canyon.
Mm-hmm. Right near where we are right now.
Yeah.
At the library.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, no, it was in Blythedale Canyon, maybe.
Okay.
But it was in one of these canyons. Mm-hmm. And I said, I want to live in Mill Valley. It's beautiful here. And this boy said, okay, we'll do that. I did it, but not with him.
Wow. So what year was it when you moved then to
okay,
Strawberry?
So it would have been 63, 64 was in San Diego. So around 64,
okay.
June of 64, 65, somewhere
okay.
there.
Okay. And then so you had, where was your daughter born?
She was born in San Diego.
Oh, okay.
And then, but she was, yeah, she was born in San Diego, but she was like 3 months old when we...
When you moved. And what is her name?
Tane. And she lives in Mill Valley.
And what is
too.
Her? What is her full name?
Tana Dijogo Leitner.
Okay, and it's T-A-N-A?
T-A-N-E.
T-A-N-E, Tane.
Tane, seed.
Like a seed
like
in Japanese,
seed.
Yes.
Right. So she didn't change her name to Leitner, so she's not Leitner. She's mm-hmm. Tana Dijogo.
Mm-hmm.
But she married Robert Leitner.
And do they have children?
Yes, so they have two children. One is Grace Dijogo Leitner mm-hmm. and Ben Dijogo Leitner. And they both, Grace is at Cal now,
mm-hmm.
and Ben is at Tam High.
Okay, so they stayed in Mill Valley as
so
well.
So they stayed in Mill Valley. I mean, it is unbelievable that they were able to do that.
Well,
and my other daughter is too, well, as you know.
And tell me, how much younger is your next daughter?
1 year.
Oh,
they're only
okay.
a year apart.
Okay, so tell me your other daughter's
so
full name, too.
So that's Maki Dijogo, mm-hmm. M-A-K-I. And then she married David Spiegelman, who grew up in Mill Valley, I think, pretty much. And they have two children, Sam Dijogo Spiegelman mm-hmm. and Josie Dijogo Spiegelman.
Mm-hmm. And how old are they at right now?
Sam is 16 mm-hmm. and Josie's 13.
And you said Sam is a junior at TAM,
yeah, uh-huh,
and Josie is
Mill
what?
Valley Middle School, 8th grade.
Okay. Okay. So you have, so what was it like when you first got settled in Strawberry and in Mill Valley? Describe Mill Valley.
Well,
at that
we
time.
we were in Strawberry mm-hmm. in apartments for mm-hmm. over a year. Yeah, about, or almost 2 maybe a year and a half, and right behind the apartment, the apartments are right behind the shopping center, the Strawberry Shopping Center, because you could look down off the balcony and see the shopping center. And it was just like it, I mean, that part, it looks like, it doesn't look so very different, but it's just fancier, you know. It's been remodeled, and so everything has been upgraded and made to look more modern. But it was also a place where, you know, where we didn't even think that we couldn't afford it. Everybody could afford it. I mean, if you had jobs. So it was for ordinary people. And I'm thinking the term for ordinary people has changed
since that time.
Yes.
Where did your daughters go to preschool and elementary school?
Tana and they both went to Beverly Bastion's nursery schools, which were Tamalpais Nursery School, Strawberry Nursery School, Hawthorne in Belvedere. No, Belvedere Nursery School. Hawthorne was up on the hill. She also had one in Sausalito at St. Andrew's Church. So there were, I think, five nursery schools, and so my kids went to a combination of those. Maki mainly went to Tamalpais. Tana went to Strawberry and Hawthorne, I think. I can't remember who went to what. And Maki went to, she started out because Sam's parents would babysit them, and she was at Belvedere Nursery School at a time where Belvedere was changing too. There were, you know, apartments that were being built, whereas before they looked like they were single floored things, and then they got, you know, these larger apartments.
And when you moved, where was your husband working, and where were you working?
He was working for 40 Gold Street at Max Lanphier Associates, which was a studio with different kinds of artists. He was mainly an illustrator. And
of what type of, were they books or magazines, or what did
you
do?
Mainly point of purchase stuff, which is advertising art. And I was having I was a mom for 2 years and losing my mind. And so some of us are not meant to just stay home. I just wasn't a good mommy. It wasn't enough for me to be a mommy. So I started working for Beverly Bastion, who started a fringe school of children who were nursery school dropouts. And so it was a school for disturbed children and children that couldn't make it in nursery school, which I think was brilliant of her to do. And it was a small, it was in the Strawberry, that church, the Presbyterian church. And it was, I think there were, let's see, Vicky and there were two or three of us, two teachers, and I think I was the third one to join, because those children were getting older and they needed to learn to read, and they needed to hire somebody who could do that. So they hired me because I had a credential. And so as the children got to be 5 and 6, they got, I was at the other end. So that was my job, was to try to help them with the academic part that they were going to need when we hoped they would transition someday back into regular school. So I got a very unique training, and I worked for them for 18 years.
Wow.
Yeah, until the school, I couldn't do it anymore, and then the school started to lose its funding because it was a nonprofit. And it was also moving in a direction that didn't fit what we were, our original plan. But it was a visionary, a really great vision that this woman had, and we tried to carry it out. Mm-hmm. It was very, we only had maybe 4 or 5 children each with an aide.
Wow.
Because these children were, they just could get out of control so mm-hmm. easily.
So now you're a kindergarten teacher, yeah. and a renowned kindergarten teacher, by the way, at Marin really? Country Day School. That's what I've heard. That's word on the street is,
oh my God,
that you are just a tremendous kindergarten teacher. When did you transition to Marin Country Day School after working in the type of school you were?
Okay, so by then my kids were in college. No, in high school. They mm-hmm. had started high school, and I thought it would be a better idea for me to get a job where the salary didn't go down every year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I looked in the Chronicle want ads, and they needed 3 teachers in Marin Country Day, kindergarten, 2nd and 5th.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had an interview, and the headmaster said, which grade would you like to teach, you know, if you get this job? And I said, oh, I'll take kindergarten.
Mm-hmm. And what year was that?
I don't know. Let's mm-hmm. see. It was a long time ago. It was 30... This would be my 32nd year, so I finished 31 years there. So you
at Marin Country Day.
Yeah.
That is absolutely amazing. That's why you're renowned.
Well, because I've been around. I endure. But I know that my training that I had in this therapeutic school shaped the kind of teaching that I did.
Mm-hmm.
So, whereas I love content and stuff, I don't really care whether what it is. You know, the content for me is only the bridge to the child.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if you can move the heart of the child, you can move. They can learn anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's my simple philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, I've been very lucky to have a job that was so stimulating. And Marin Country Day is a great place to work because after Sam, when I first started working there, I said, Sam, these children don't need me. They have done everything. They've been everywhere. They have everything. I don't think this is where I'm supposed to be. And he finally looked at me and he said, you know, he said, Janet, those kids can't help it if they're rich. Mm-hmm. Why don't you just go and have fun? A new concept.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those are wise words because, you know, because they also need good teaching and people who care about them, teachers who care. And so I've stayed. But what you have at Marin Country Day or any school, independent school like it, is a lot of, you can have everything, you mm-hmm. know, as far as curriculum goodies go, but you can also do as much professional development as you want. And I think that's extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
There's not ever been a workshop or anything that I've wanted to do that has been denied.
Mm.
You know, basically they don't do that. They even sent us about 10 years ago to Italy.
Hmm.
Our whole team, my whole kindergarten team.
And where did you get to go?
Reggio Emilia.
I was going to ask you.
Yeah.
That can't be in my... I'm saying I'm jealous, but you can. That doesn't need to be recorded. But that's incredible. That's,
yeah, it is incredible. Yeah. So it's fun. And my colleagues, I love my colleagues, the 2 men I teach with. And my friend once said to me, you don't retire because you love the people you work with. And that is so true.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful.
It is. I'm so lucky.
Well, even though you said you didn't want to be a stay-at-home mommy,
yeah,
you are a mother to 2 mm-hmm. daughters.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to have embraced their Japanese heritage in some way. How did that happen with them?
I think they have both had exposure. They had time with my mother and father. And
so they were still very involved with your children.
Yeah, they were pretty involved. And Sam's stepfather and mother took care of them when they were you know, when I work part-time at those nurseries, or the Marin Child Development Center is what it was called. And they, so they were exposed to that, but not a whole lot more. But they both studied Japanese at college, so, you know, it was something they wanted to know more about. Maki, I think, took 2 years of Japanese. Tana majored in it, and then Maki went off onto her, you know. But they both did their junior year abroad in Japan.
And where did they study in Japan?
The ICU, which is the international. Did you go there too? Oh my gosh, as a junior?
Yes.
Okay.
Another time we're going to have to talk about that. Yes, I did.
Yes, they did. So, well, that program is still going then.
Oh, yes.
And so they both did their junior year abroad, and so they both spent a year there.
Mm-hmm.
Tane then came back, graduated, and went into JET.
Mm-hmm.
And so she and Rob actually met in Tokyo, even though they both went to Berkeley, at the JET program
is a Japanese English teachers program.
Yeah.
Sponsored by the Japanese government.
Right, right. And so they, you know, so they just, whatever they learned was pretty, they were immersed in that culture.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sort of immersed, semi-immersed.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next year, and then Tane, after she finished JET, came back. Oh, and then she went back. No, she did JET, and then she found what is the commitment for JET?
I believe it's one or two years. I can't recall.
One. Anyway, she found a job at Levi's in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And so she and Rob stayed there. And Rob had another job. And they stayed in Japan for, altogether, they were between JET and their own jobs. They were there for 3 years. So they, you know, and they're both fluent in Japanese, and they both read, write, and speak it. So it's just part of who they are.
Mm-hmm. And then what about your other daughter?
And then Maki did the junior year abroad, came back and graduated, and then she went to JET also.
Mm-hmm.
And she was in Yokohama for a year, and then she came back. And then she went to law school. So then now, that's the way it went.
And have they taught their children Japanese?
No.
Because
Maki doesn't speak it. And I asked them why they didn't speak Japanese to their children, Tane and Rob. And they said, because we're not native speakers.
That is exactly what my husband and I have said.
Really?
Exactly, yes. We can talk off the record about that. But so tell me about your husband and you, once your kids were in high school and you're back at work, where was your husband working?
By the time I think Tana was maybe in the second or third grade, he started to freelance. Max Lanfear retired. And so the studio closed down, and he decided he could make it freelancing. So he freelanced from then on. And so he worked out of home, and he had a little studio underneath a garage that he outfitted, and he was able to pick up the kids from Old Mill School and bring them home and feed them snack, and so I think it was a lovely time.
Mm-hmm.
I think I know he just loved that time with them. So they were very close to their dad.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, and he'd go to, Tana ran track, and Maki ran a little track also. He would be with it down there at Tam High with the track mommies.
Uh-huh.
Was it Tuesday or Thursday afternoons?
Which was very unusual for the time to have a dad at home.
He was the only, yes, and he was the only one in the track mommies that was a male.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And did you, either you or your husband, ever feel living in Mill Valley, because there weren't, probably not very many Asian people living here.
No,
you ever sense any type of prejudice or encounter anything?
I think there probably were. the encounter was definitely when we were going to look for a rental, and we went to this place that's still here on Miller Avenue, an apartment on the right-hand side. It's a Innsbruck or something
That's
like
still
that.
there.
And we went there, and they had a, because they had a for rent sign. This was before eBay or whatever,
Craigslist or any of
Craigslist,
those.
any of those. And they said it was rented. And we had the definite and distinct impression that it hadn't been, and that we were being, racially profiled. And because a couple days later we went by and the rent, it was still for rent, but we didn't go back there. So we ended up in Strawberry. So that would have been the one time that was blatant. And when we bought the property that we built the house on Tamalpais, I
So is that
remember.
where you lived most of the time? Is
Yeah.
what was the address on Tamalpais?
269.
Tamalpais. Okay.
We ended up building a house because we looked for houses, but we didn't see anything we liked for the price that we could arrange. And so we bought that. I was thinking about it this morning. It was in the Chronicle Want ad for $13,000 for the lot, and we bought it for 11.5. Can you? It's like never. It's
You
just a
can't
joke
even
now.
imagine now where that lot would have how many extra zeros added
I
on to
know,
it.
it's just so incredible. So we decided, and I think it was the absolute right thing to do is to build this house because we could build it for what they were offering. That were some of the one of the rope was the walls. The wall was caved this way,
Oh,
you
all
know.
curved.
Yeah, it was curved. Was something really wrong with it? And so we built the house, and but I think because both Sam and I had the unusual experience of having lived among Caucasian people mainly, that we didn't have a problem. I mean, we were confident in work and in ourselves. You know, we weren't, neither of us were in a Japanese American community. So we had a comfort zone that was different. And it was actually for me more than for Sam. I was not as comfortable in the Japanese American milieu as I was in a regular, what I think of was normal for me. And it was very, it's an odd thing. And that I didn't understand. Maybe I told you this story on the phone, but Ma Tane, when she was, I think, 7, got a bit part in John Cordy's. She said one line for which she got paid $500 in a film that he made called Farewell to Manzanar.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And I know the book
Yeah,
well.
right. John J Jean Houston. Okay, what was I starting to talk about?
About her at age 7.
At age 7, so she had this little bit part, but she no, that I there was some something I've forgotten. It'll come back to me. Anyway, she was in this movie, and it was, it was. And the rest of us got to be extras.
Now, did they ever feel, have your daughters ever said in retrospect, because there probably were not very many Asian children in their classes at Old Mill
No.
or MVMS, Mill Valley Middle
No.
School, or at Tam High, did they ever feel anything, any prejudice, or did they notice
If they did,
anything?
they never said it to us. I don't think that they did. I think it would have just manifested itself in the mean things middle school girls do to each other anyway, whether depending on it. But I don't think they ever felt, you'd have to ask them.
Now, when you came in here, you told me that you had done Zazen. So that leads me to believe that you have come to identify with some Japanese culture
Well,
recently.
actually, the Zen community in America, or at least in the Bay Area, mm-hmm. is very strong and is not affiliated with Japanese mm-hmm. Americans.
Mm-hmm.
It's mainly white people,
mm-hmm.
you know, who are sitting zazen, and the, you know, the abbots and all those people mm-hmm. who lead Green Gulch are mainly Caucasian.
Mm.
And what happened, I think, got me interested in zazen or any sort of meditation was the experience I had in Mill Valley doing Aikido. There was a very strong Aikido center, Aikido of Tamalpais, which is, it's right in down, what street is that? It's downtown. Mm-hmm. It used to be a car dealer, apparently, ages mm-hmm. ago, and the top floor was a dojo.
Mm-hmm.
So Sam and I trained there for years,
mm-hmm.
and now that dojo has moved to... Puerto Madero, mm-hmm. no, or Larkspur, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so I became interested in the mind-body-spirit thing
mm-hmm.
Through Aikido. And then I started meditating because I was so scared of Aikido that I was trying to calm my mind. Mm-hmm. And so I started sitting on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And so... once in a while, I go to this. There's at O'Hanlon Center. Mm-hmm. There's a class that meets, and so I go to that in the summertime if I can, and then sometimes I do a half day sitting with them.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the teacher. The main teacher there is Ed Satizan, who's right now the abiding abbot of the San Francisco Zen Center.
Mm.
And so, like, Sunday he has to do a lecture at Green Gulch. So I just like his humility and his sweetness.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how, but it wasn't because of the Japanese
thing.
That's
interesting. That's interesting.
It's not my karma. I know, it's very odd the way that...
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are other people like us that mm-hmm. are not... I don't know, we just missed the Japanese boat.
Oh, it's just, I find it fascinating
to hear
your story.
Yeah.
So you, what, if you're looking at Mill Valley today, you've referred to it quite a few times in our chat about how you've seen this area change.
Mm-hmm.
What are the most profound changes, do you think?
Well, I think it's probably what everybody says. It's the influx of a lot of money that did not define Mill Valley in the beginning.
And how would you have defined it when you moved here?
It was a place, a sweet village for normal people where we didn't think of ourselves as, it wasn't a special, I mean, it was, if you lived or you love Mill Valley, it is a special place. I mean, geographically and, It is special to be a little village at the bottom of a mountain, you know, a little town at the bottom of a mountain. It's picturesque.
Mm-hmm.
It's different than other places. And there were a lot of artists
mm-hmm.
and artsy types, including us in those days. And but I don't think we felt important or special. We just were lucky that
mm-hmm.
we landed here, you know, and that we could be here. But we'd never thought, oh, I can't afford Mill Valley, or you know, I can't live here
mm-hmm.
because, you know, these people are not like me.
Mm-hmm.
And everywhere you went in Mill Valley, because the population must have been smaller then, there were people you knew.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I went to the Mill Valley Market, you had to kind of think about it because you were going to see people and it would take you longer to get out
mm-hmm.
than you thought. So don't be in a hurry, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I think mainly it is how fancy it's become, and it's become like downtown Mill Valley, by 7 o'clock it was dead,
mm-hmm.
you know? There was nobody you know, there were no coffee shops or I guess maybe there was a bar or two, but there weren't the amount of restaurants and restaurants that there are now. And now the you know, there was a dime store, and there were two dime stores when I got here, and two pharmacies. And now they're like, I don't know how many furniture stores we have, and you know, boutique
Women's clothing.
women's clothing. And I mean, it's like, it feels to me like it's becoming Sausalito, you know, that feeling that you can't really get anything you need, like a, you know, like a spool of thread or a button or
Yes,
something.
I was trying to figure out where I could buy stationery today.
Oh, that's another thing. I asked my friend, where do you buy your paper to put in your printer? You know, because I used to go to the office supply place.
Mill Valley Services,
Yeah.
Ideal Stationers has
And
closed.
both of them. And luckily, I don't usually need paper because I'm still working and I can, and you know, I do a lot of most of my printing at school, but I just happened to run out at home. So my friend brought me some because she uses a they use a lot of it because they have a business, a small business. And so she uses the fax and she uses her computer a lot more than I do. So she helped me and she just something was wrong with it. So she brought me some paper.
That's wonderful.
I
But many of the interviews that I've done, people have mentioned that previously there was a hardware store,
Yes.
the general
There were two
store,
hardware
and
stores.
pharmacies, and Strawbridge's was the stationery
That's
store.
right. And
And
there
there,
was a bookstore
yes,
beside the be I mean,
beside the
before the
depot.
depot, you know, was an honest to God bookstore, you know, where you can order a book and get a book, you know. Thank gosh for this library.
And tell me if it's not too difficult, tell me about your husband. You said he passed away.
He did about in 2000, just before 2000, so in 1999, 98, late in 98, he was diagnosed with advanced bladder cancer. And so it was a really horrible year. And he died, yeah, on Halloween Day of 1999. So he did not make it to 2000. So it was difficult and it was so sad, as you can imagine.
Yes, I can imagine.
Yeah. It was sad for my children, you know, but and so he only got to meet two of his grandchildren, Gracie, and Sam was 10 months old when he when Sam so Sam has no memory of him, and Gracie really doesn't. She was 3 when he died, and she can't really remember, she said, anything about him, although he took care of her every Friday for all her 3 years.
And then Sam, your grandson Sam, carries his name.
Yep, he does. And Ben carries his name also because his name is Benjamin Masami Daijogo Leitner, come to think of it.
So do the other grandchildren have Japanese names?
No, except for Daijogo, because that's their middle name for all of them. So that's, I don't know what they do to the next generation.
So, very last question,
Yes.
because we're almost to 90
Yes.
minutes. If you could name one thing that you're most proud of in your life, what would you say that might be?
Can I name two things?
Of course.
One is that I earned a black belt in Aikido, and the next is that it's my teaching career. I think I've been lucky and blessed.
I'm sure many, many of your students, I mean, this is so many decades of students that you
Yes, that's
have
true.
inspired, would probably say so too, because what I've heard is just accolades about you, and that's
I have good press.
Yes, you have wonderful press. But I just, on behalf of the Mill Valley Public Library and the Mill Valley Historical Society, I would love to thank you for the opportunity to interview you and the time that you've spent talking about your life and what Mill Valley was like, because it has certainly changed since you arrived.
It has.
So
it has.
Is there anything else that you would like to say?
No, except thank you for taking the time, and I hope you get some other people.
Oh, yes, we've had lots. So thank you very much. I'm going to press this off now.